Welcome to the Chris Ruggiero Podcast with your host, Chris Ruggiero.
What's up, my podcast listeners? Thanks again for listening in this week with Alex Clark. Alex is an entertainer through different mediums. He performs a lot of street style shows. He performs at festivals and in theaters. And he also talks about how he is now making cartoons on YouTube and how he has recently gotten nearly 3 million views on his cartoons, which is pretty crazy. He used to be in a juggling duo and now he's performing solo. So we chat about that a little bit and how that makes life on the road a little bit different, you know, being by yourself versus having someone out with you. He talks about some crazy stories of insane people that he meets on the streets who sometimes interrupt his shows and how he deals with those situations. So let's get into it. Here's Alex. So summer's coming and you do a lot of street performing, right?
Yeah, and a lot of fairs now too, because I lucked out and got an awesome agent. Those fairs.
Yes. So what do you typically do at a fair? How's it different from your street performing show?
There's usually a constant worry that I'll say something that'll get me in trouble. And I never do. I never do, but it's always like, well, someone's going to say something. So I think that's the biggest difference. And there's,
That's at a fair, because on a street you can kind of do whatever you want.
You can do whatever you want, and if they don't like it, what are they going to do?
Yeah,
call the mayor. They're gonna call the mayor and be like, "I was in Boulder, Colorado, and there was this guy." The mayor's gonna be like, "Yeah, I know, I love him. He's great." But no, at a fair, like, they can go to an information booth. It hasn't happened, but you just worry about it because you have to keep people happy. That's our number one job, I think, is keeping people happy.
Yeah. How is that different than you do stage shows as well and some colleges and things like that?
Stage shows are even higher pressure because you only get one shot to do it. And usually way more tense, and the clients are way more judgy because they're like, everyone's here. I put this together. You have to make me look good. Whereas at a fair, the people that hired you hired like a million things.
Yeah.
And you're just one of the things. So, you know, if they like you, that's great. But if they, you know, it's not as high pressure, but again, still no complaints or anything.
That's kind of an interesting look at it, where you kind of approach these things as kind of impressing or not impressing, but keeping people happy as far as the people that book you.
Yeah.
Now, how much do you have to worry about that on doing shows? That's something that I kind of worry about all the time, is impressing the people who book me and people that are paying me, when really, like, I think sometimes I have to remind myself that I'm there to entertain the audience, not the person who booked me.
Yeah, I wouldn't use the word impressing for the way I look at it, but more keeping them very, very happy. As happy as possible. And then maybe they become impressed because of that, but my main thing is, like, just keep everyone really, really happy. Happy with their purchase. Including the audience, the people that booked you. Send so many emails out before I even do a gig, just to keep people happy. Because then they're in a happy mood when they meet you and they're like, oh, this guy's a nice guy. He sent me all these emails. Which I got the idea. I don't know if I should be revealing these dark secrets to the entire world. Because some fair is going to watch this and be like, oh, he's so great. He's awesome. Watch what I say here. I got the idea because I was at, I think, McDonald's or Panera one day. And I'm reading the side of the bag, and it's like, we're committed to providing you only the finest ingredients because you want to live a full life. And I was like, they're so full of shit. They're so full of shit. But they put it on everything, so everyone's like, oh, that's what Panera is all about. That's what McDonald's is all about, making sure I live a full life.
But that's funny because people believe that then, too. Like, oh, yeah. McDonald's is looking out for me. And all it took was a little logo
they put it all over everything. And then I was like, well, I should do that. But the funny thing is, at first I didn't mean it at all, but now the more I do it, the more I'm like, yeah, I believe this. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool thing to think about, that you start to say something like that and then it becomes ingrained and you start to actually stand by it and stuff.
Yeah, like I just did a fair, and when we were there, they were talking about how cool the shot would be if they got this shot from up on the hill that oversaw the thing. And they talked about it, and I was like, oh, when I get home, I'll go take that picture, And I went and took it. And then when I got home, I put it in a frame and mailed it to him.
Nice.
And like 4 or 5 years ago, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do this and they're going to love it. And I'm like, no, that's a nice thing to do. They'll like it. So yeah, I guess my mindset changed. Both times it was both a nice thing to do, but before it was for the business gain. And now it's just like, oh, if you do nice things, people do nice things back.
Yeah, I think we, I was talking about it with somebody else, how we kind of, in a way, lose that super businessy hustle that we have, right, when we first start, where, like, you think everything that you do is going to turn into this awesome, you know, awesome opportunity. Every single person that you meet is going to give you, you know, a new show or something.
Yeah.
And that's kind of necessary, right, when you start, because you need to have that push and stuff. And then as you go, you realize that most people aren't going to help you.
Yeah.
And then you become, like, a little bit, you kind of lose it, where it's kind of like you have to keep that balance of keep doing things. But then, like you said, I think we learn that you do things that are like that, a nice thing or something, and it's, you don't really looking for something out of it, but you're still getting something, you know, some point out of it.
Yeah.
If only just you feel good about doing it.
Yeah, just be in a good mood, do a good job, and the longer you go on with your career, the more people, you start building up a roster of people that recognize that and keep using you again and again because they like the way you are. That's how I got my agent. They had a bunch of acts at this fair we were doing, and I was like, oh, all the entertainment isn't from that agency is in this trailer. We're going to hang out with them the whole time. So even though we were supposed to be in a different trailer, we spent the whole week in the trailer with that agency's entertainment and befriended them. And then at the end, they had water bubblers in the trailer, and they'd run out of water, and all the acts were pissed about it. So it was like, my partner at the time, Dave, was like, Dave, we got to go to Walmart and bring back like 5 gallons of water. They're going to love it. And then we did that, and they all freaked out, and like, oh, this is so nice. And then like 2 weeks later, the agent called and like, yeah, we heard you got them water and you're fun to work with. And like, yep. Yeah, it's all about doing nice stuff. Do nice stuff and people do nice stuff back.
Yeah, and it's kind of the balance of that is crazy when you think about that. You know, you went and spent $10.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was nothing, but yeah, it was something, the thought and the, you know, the motivation behind it was so much more powerful than that.
Yeah, it's the thought that counts. It really is.
Now, you used to perform much more with a duo act.
Yep.
And now you're performing mostly or exclusively as a solo act?
Exclusively, yeah. It's awesome.
How did that come about, and how's that affecting you differently now that you're performing by yourself instead of having someone else with you?
Life is way easier. Life is way easier because now when you book a gig, instead of the money lasting like 2 weeks, it lasts 2 months.
Right.
When I was a kid, I really wanted a juggling duo. I have no idea why. I really did. I wanted a juggling duo. I wanted us to wear zoot suits. And I was like, this is going to be the biggest thing that ever hit the world. I wore a zoot suit to my senior prom, and my girlfriend hated it. And I was like, I don't know why. It's awesome. It's a mustard yellow zoot suit. And then I saw a picture of it like 3 weeks ago at my grandmother's house. And I was like, no wonder she hated it. I looked like one of those fat kid pencils. Super fat. That's what I looked like. But I always wanted that, and then we did it. My first partner wasn't really into it, and he was like, you should go solo, man. You should go solo. Like, that's what you're meant for. I was like, yeah, I kind of feel that, but my agents at the time, they were pretty new, and they wanted the duo. It's like, they want the duo. I got to do the duo again. So I got a new partner. That didn't really work out. Just wasn't meant to be. And then so I started working solo, and it just got better and better.
Nice. Is there anything, so a lot of benefits of going solo, is there anything that you miss from having someone with you and having that kind of as a fallback partner?
The real test of that, the one thing I did like about it is always having someone to like go to dinner with and travel with. Like, you wouldn't talk all the time. It's just like, oh, hey, there you are. Yeah, you're sitting back 10 rows on the plane. That's cool. At least I know you're there.
Yeah.
Right? But my second partner, like half the time, he didn't even want to go out to dinner. I remember, seriously, we had an argument once. I was like, dude, 75% of the reason I work with you is so I can go to dinner with somebody.
Right, yeah.
<you're> not going. But the real test of that is going to be this summer because it's my first, like, I'm going to be gone for 2 months by myself, driving all over. But I've done a couple one-off gigs, and it's great. It's fine. Do the show. I'm pretty much a loner anyway, so.
Yeah, I find that's kind of that's usually the hardest part about going out, and then the show is fine. The show is easy, and then you're sitting by yourself. That's kind of tough. That's why I think as I've always performed by myself, and I always kind of look at duo acts or troupes and stuff. I'm like, oh, that would be awesome. You have somebody to hang out with and all that. And then, you know, it's kind of cool to hear where, you know, if you're in that spot and then you, your partner or whatever is not into it. And you're like, well, like you said, what the heck? What's the point of this? You're, you know.
Yeah.
And same, even like at the very lowest level is like you're dealing, you're splitting your money and then you're not even getting, you know, anything out of
so
it.
So much harder. My first partner was like, dude, you're meant to be a solo act. And the longer I've been doing it, the more I realize he's right. And the more I realize that some people literally are meant to be duo acts. Like that's, they work well like that.
Yeah.
Like the best example is the Raspini brothers, because Barry is so 100% about the business. Doesn't very much care so much about creating and performance and stuff. And Dan Holzman is all about writing jokes and the tricks and all that. And like, what a perfect marriage of two people's skills.
Yeah, so that's some. So Barry of the Raspini Brothers is a mutual friend and collaborator of ours. I kind of wanted to chat about that a little bit. So
sure.
Barry runs a program called the Showbiz Blueprint. And it is for entertainers, kind of all types, that... He helps on the purely like on the business side of booking shows and providing great service to clients. And Alex and I are both, I guess we're called alumni of the program.
Yeah,
which is kind of a weird way to think about it, but it's great. And again, Barry is the business genius.
Yeah.
What have you gotten out of, you know, collaborating with Barry and the rest of the Showbiz Blueprint people or other people who have, you've collaborated with?
Business-wise, the main thing I got out of other people and especially Barry's program is the more work you put in outside of just the show, the less good the show has to be.
Yeah.
So when you
That's like a funny thing when you think about to say, but it's, you know, very true.
Yeah. It's so true. Like, if you're, like, super friendly and likable and you're easy to work with, you can have the worst show on the planet. And they're like, oh, yeah, we'll have you back. But then if you do all that stuff and you have a good show or a great show, like, that is the most incredible thing I've ever seen. Like, we have to have you back.
Right.
It's like there's some sort of saying. I went to film school and there was some saying, like, when you make a movie, there's all these checks and balances and stuff. And, like, as long as... the collective equal of all of them is 100%, you're going to have a great movie. So if you have like a really intricate story that's amazing, you don't need special effects. But if you have amazing special effects, no one gives a crap about the story at all. It's keeping all that stuff equal.
Equal and at a high level.
At a high level, yeah.
Or at a moderately high level.
Yeah. And then performance-wise... I love watching people's shows. I still do. I was just hanging out with Jonathan Burns, who, what a hilarious clown type. I don't know if he would ever call himself a clown type act, but that's what it is, and that's the funniest parts of his show. Oh, he was saying how like you can't watch people's shows anymore. It's just like he's seen too many. And for me, there's very few shows that I can't watch, and I always get something out of it and learn from it, and it's really, really great. I love watching people's shows and seeing what they do, especially when it's new and exciting and they got something different going on. Love it.
So working on the street is pretty interesting because anyone can walk up to watch your show.
Yeah.
Where it's different than a theater where there's a bit of a barrier to, you know, whether there's a ticket sales or something, or they have to commit to, like, going to see the show. Have you had any good experiences or not good experiences or interesting experience of heckler type people or interesting characters that come see you on the street or at festivals?
Of course. The three that stick out in my mind were I was on Venice Beach. I don't know. I was doing some racial... I did some racial jokes about, like, Los Angeles is my favorite part of Mexico and stuff like that. They were all funny, but 10 or 15 minutes after that, like, I had clearly moved on and was, like, halfway done with the show. Had not said any racial humor at all. This guy comes up to me. He's like, what'd you say about Mexico, man? I'm sorry. It was more like, what'd you say about Mexico, bro? And I was like, what? And he's like, Mexico. What'd you say about Mexico? And I was like, nothing, man. We all love Mexicans. That's why we live in Venice Beach. And then, like, we went back and forth. And when I'm on stage, I, like, you know, we all get confident and cocky. And, like, especially in a street show, you have to maintain that or the crowd is going to piss off. And the last thing you want when you got a crazy heckler is for everyone to walk you away and leave you alone with the heckler. Like, that is the last thing you want to happen. So I gave him shit, and he walked away. But we were arguing back and forth for like 3 or 4 minutes, and I noticed when he walked away, he had like a sharpened screwdriver in his hand like that, and he was totally going to stab me. Another time in Australia, this dude with no shirt on, just totally plastered and on ecstasy, and I don't know. What's the hip drug right now? Quaaludes, is that the big thing? So he was out of his mind, no shirt on, and he had his, and his hand was in his pants, and he was like, yo, man, let's do this. And it was a monster street show in Australia, and it was been 110 degrees out for the 4 weeks that we were there, and this was a show at night, like a first good one. I was like, there's no way that this guy is going to ruin this. So I just like yelled, like, get the hell out of here, except I was a little bit more PC, but probably swore. And I was like, just get the fuck out of here. And I just ran up to him as fast as I could and like put my hand right here and shoved him out of the circle. And like the whole crowd cheered and pulled him out. And they were like, get out of here, get lost. Another time in Ottawa, Canada, this dude walked up to me right in the middle of the circle and put his arms out like a cross like this. And looked down at his feet, and he was like, I am Jesus's warrior. And then he just wouldn't move. And then my other friend kept pulling him out, and then he kept walking in and doing that. And eventually he came back, and my buddy Paul Perreault from the Engagement Ring show, I didn't even see it coming. He just, full steam ahead, he tackled the guy, and I watched him carry a grown man like 2.5 blocks down the street. And it was just like, you can't come back, but I'm going to give you a hug to say goodbye. He told me this. And then he hugged him and we never saw him again. Most recently I was in... Oh, this was the perfect example of what we were talking about earlier, keeping people happy. So I do this little farmer's market sometimes, and the woman that runs it is very like, play by the rules, keep the fire marshal happy, don't upset anyone. So I'm a natural fit for there, obviously. And this guy comes in, reeking alcohol and like, totally, definitely, probably homeless, which is unfortunate, but just reeking and not there for a good time. And he stood right in the front and center, and like the whole area cleared out around him because he was like kind of talking loudly and stuff. So I played with him a little bit. I said he was my dad, and then I gave him a hug, and I was like, oh, you smell just like I remember, Papa. And then messing around a little bit just to like calm everybody down. And then he started coming in the circle, and he had this watch on. And he kept taking the watch off, putting it on the ground, and then be like, that's what time it is! And I would try to pick up his watch and give him, don't touch the watch! Totally freaking out. This went on for like 10, 15 minutes, and because I was at a farmer's market with like a boss and stuff, I would have gotten rid of him a long time ago. But I couldn't because I didn't want to get in trouble or anything. So I kept, eventually I like gently guided him out, and then he came back. And then I was up on my freestanding ladder, and he tried to climb it while I was on it. So then I got really upset. Security came. But then, you know, security, they're not allowed to touch anybody. Yeah, unless you're a police officer. Anyone that's, like, security, they're not allowed to touch anyone. Like, it's against the rules. They can't do shit. They can, like, they can talk you down from punching each other. That's about it.
Yeah.
But so he comes, and they go right in the middle of the circle while I'm trying to do the show. And he's like talking to this guy, and it's like really uncomfortable. So I'm like, this is ridiculous. I was like, sir, I need you to leave, and he wouldn't. So I like gently started to push him out, but he was so drunk and plastered that by the time he got outside the circle, he fell over. And that like spread like wildfire to my organizer, and then she came. She's like, I heard you shoved a homeless guy down for no reason, and like totally freaked out. And was like, we need a statement from the police. During my show, she like came and said this during my show, but there were so many people there that had seen me put up with this guy for like 30 minutes that they started yelling at her and booing, and like, that does not help. If anyone's listening that's ever watching a show, never be like, you're doing the wrong thing to an organizer. That does not help at all. But yeah, a bunch of people came forward and said I did the right thing, and I don't know why I told you that story. It was boring. Don't put that in. It was awful. Don't put that in.
Yeah, so that's crazy. That all of those things kind of showed how absolutely crazy out of their mind a lot of people are.
Yeah,
and it's so nuts how, you know, like one person can be so have such an impact on what you're doing and in your show.
And you know what? It used to be really hard for me to handle that and keep the show rolling. A lot of times I would just freak out and just yell at them and tell them to leave. But you have to make sure the audience is on your side, first of all. And if they're on your side, you can kind of do whatever you want. And you just have to keep in mind whenever I do a show, like, my first priority is, again, making sure the audience is happy and in a good mood. So, like, if something goes wrong, I generally think if something goes wrong like that where someone interrupts the show, my first thought is, like, what would the audience want me to do in this situation that would make me appear to be a nice guy? Which is a weird thought process to have. But that's pretty much what I think. And then I go down that road. I'm like, they would probably, you know, want me to ask politely for this guy to leave. And then, you know, you keep going down that tree and that trail. And eventually it leads you somewhere. That's how I think about things.
Do you think dealing with crazy audience or crazy people on the street helps you in dealing with, like, volunteers and things in your show, and being able to pick good people out of the show and kind of judging people on, like, a very rapid, like, a very fast-paced thing to pick people to participate in your show?
It doesn't help me with that, but what it does help me with is, this is what I meant to say before, is that it helps me think on my feet, because I used to, like, just take it very seriously and be like, well, we got to get rid of this guy and we got to call security. But I've dealt with it so many times that I realize the audience just wants you to keep it fun and light. So, you know, I just start cracking jokes and improvising a little bit, and as long as you handle it right. So I think it helps more with, like, if the lights go out during a show or the sound breaks, I'm not all of a sudden like, oh my God, I'm sorry guys, this isn't supposed to happen.
Yeah.
You know, instead I'm like, oh, sorry, you know, they were meant to turn the lights off earlier because I look better in this light. You know, something stupid like that, but I go for lighthearted more. So I think it helps more with stuff like that than volunteers.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody recently, I forget who, but we were talking about, like, things that go wrong in a show, and then kind of, like, having that attitude going into it of, what's the worst that can happen?
Yeah.
And usually, like, the worst thing that could ever happen, if you really think about it, like, we get, you know, maybe nervous or anxious, like, going into a show or something, a new thing or something. And then if you kind of have that attitude of what's the worst that could ever happen, and then sometimes, like, that really does happen, you know, at least once in performing, you're going to have the worst show, you know, by default, one show of yours in your career or your life is going to be the worst ever. And how great of an experience to have that happen, like, early in your career.
Yeah.
Where then you know, well, at least that didn't happen, or, you know, at least this, you know, even if it does happen, you know, I got through it. And, you know, the audience left, and, you know, those whatever, you know, a couple hundred people probably, you know, aren't going to have a good, you know, memory of me, but they're gone now, and now all these new people, you know, I can move from there.
But the thing is, I bet those people after 2 weeks won't even remember.
Right, yeah, it'll drive you crazy for, you know, the same thing, a week or two, and then you'll forget about it, and those people will forget about it long before you, you know.
Yeah.
Long before you're, while you're still thinking about it and worrying about it.
Yeah.
So that's something that probably relevant to entertainers as well as, you know, everyday people in any day, you know, experience, like when you're nervous about something or anything going into it, you know, think about that. What's the worst that can happen? And even so, you know, in a couple of days, you're going to not even be thinking about it.
Yeah. The only time, I don't get nervous for shows ever, but the only type of performance that frustrates me is showcases. Especially because I'm sure it's the same with you. Like, you know, you have a great show and if they book it, they would love it. But you're sitting there going, well, what can I do in 15 minutes that will get that across?
Right.
You know, how can I make them love me? And it's very frustrating because it's like, well, you know, this, especially for me doing fairs, they're hiring me to perform outdoors doing a street show for families and children. And they want proof of that by bringing me into a little conference hall with stuffy people that have been in meetings all day.
So jump in there again. So for people who don't know what we're talking about with showcases are basically auditions to get hired to perform at different types of shows. So the big one is like college conferences, where we'll go to these conferences, and if we're selected to showcase, we'll be able to present a sampler, a 15-minute sample of what we would do in our full show. And different college students and advisors come watch us and choose from that. And it's like you said, that's like a crazy thing. There's so much, you know, it's still fun and it's still like a fun show, but there's so much pressure on it where you have to squeeze into like, you know, 14 or 15 minutes what your whole show is about. You know,
the college ones I personally like a little bit better because they're not, the people there are not as jaded as, like, they have ones for performing arts centers and fairs and festivals and stuff. And those ones, all those people do is higher entertainment. So they've seen everything. Whereas the college ones, a lot of the kids are like, oh, free trip? Yeah, let's go. And, you know, yeah, they're only in college for 4 years. So even if they have been to a couple, they haven't seen very much. So I think the college ones, they're a better audience at the NACA showcases. And then the other thing about the NACA is that the audience makeup is the same exact makeup of people that you'd be performing for if you got booked, whereas the performing arts centers and the fairs and stuff, it's not.
Where are some of your, you know, top two or three travel destinations that you've got to experience?
My favorite place to go is definitely the Edmonton Fringe in Canada. A fringe festival, if you don't know, they're really big everywhere except for America, is a festival of anyone can apply and perform theater. So some of the biggest ones in the world, they'll have like 100 different venues with half-hour to hour-long performances going all day long. And it's all people that put their names in a hat for a lottery, a computer hat. A computer pulls out names, and if you randomly get picked, you get a show for a two-week run, and anyone can buy tickets to it and go. So they're really fun, really cool. And this one in Canada has a street performing program where it's the same. You just apply, and if you get it, you get to go. And I love it. I've got so many friends there from doing it for so long. And then I made really good friends with this girl, Elisa, who lives across the street. So I get to stay at her place for free. And you can see the festival grounds from her window. So it's like the perfect setup. And it's just a blast. It's so much fun. So much fun. If you like street performing, don't go, because then you're going to take spots away from me and my friends. But if you like indoor theater, you should totally apply.
So we talked about bad street performing experiences, hecklers and stuff. How about travel nightmares? I think that's always interesting to hear about stories of entertainers traveling and running into lost luggage or missed flights and things like that. You have any standout stories that are kind of funny looking back because they're so terrible?
Missed flight. It was our first time traveling for like 2 months for summer fairs, and we had just booked anything we could. We're like, we'll book anything we can just to make a good impression. It doesn't matter the price. We're just going to book anything. It's the end of the 2 months come, and we made a mistake booking that many things because we were doing like fares for like $800 for one day, flying into a town for one day to make $800 and then split it between two people after expenses. So it was a huge mistake. But so we're flying back and we're just so happy to go back, and we have a layover in Texas, and I'm looking at the ticket and it says we're landing in Dallas but there's no plane change. So I'm like, oh, I'll get off and grab some food and then come back. So I go off, grab some food. I'm sitting there. I finish my food. And then I'm like, there's nobody around. What's going on? Like, where is everyone? And I check my watch. And I'm like, this plane is supposed to be leaving in like 10 minutes. Like, where are all the people? So I call up Dave and I'm like, my partner. I'm like, where is everyone? And he's like, oh, they're on a different plane. I'm like, okay, I'll walk over to the gate. And like, yeah, you actually have to take a train to a different terminal. It's like a 20-minute thing. I'm like, what? So I had to run, and he was like telling him to hold the plane and stuff. Ran down the jetway gate bridge and got on the plane right before they closed the door. Happiest 30 seconds of my life. Another baggage time. This one was the worst. So I think what happened was we were doing a college, and they wanted us to come in for like a teaser or something, and we didn't. They wanted us to come in for a teaser the day before. We didn't know that, right? So we call them up and we're like, we didn't know that. We already booked the tickets. We can do the teaser the day of, no problem. We're going to get there early enough. And they were kind of upset about that. And if you don't know, a lot of the colleges want you to like walk around campus before your show just to promote it and tell everyone. So we couldn't make the teaser the day before, so like, we'll do it the next day. Next day comes around, and none of our baggage is there. So we call up the guy, and I'm like, hey, you know, we really want to do the teaser, but our baggage isn't here, so we can wait for the next plane and hope our baggage comes, or we can come and do the teaser and, you know, do a show with, like, stuff we can find around campus. He's like, no, wait for your stuff, It's fine, it's cool. He was very nice about it. And then, so I'm waiting for the baggage, and it's getting to a point where, like, if it doesn't, we're going to be late for the show. So I send Dave to Walmart, and he's got all the stuff. He's waiting in line to pay for it. And I come up, I'm like, hey, the stuff's here. So he left the carriage in line with all the stuff we were going to buy to do the show. Came back, picked me up. We did the show. Everything went great. And then a couple months later in Campus Activities Magazine, I read a review from that school. And they're like, so unorganized, didn't have everything together, wouldn't do a teaser. Their airline lost their baggage. How unprofessional. I'm like, what? This was totally outside of our control. I was so upset. I was so mad.
I think I saw that review and I was reading it and it was like painful to read because it was all the stuff that was like you said, it was like, you know, they lost your luggage and whatever. And it's like, you know, that review kind of took it out on you.
Yeah. I was like, are you kidding me? Especially because they were nice to us and we did, I don't remember the show at this point, but I remember when I read the review, I was like, but that was a good show. And like, none of those problems were our fault. But whatever, you can't keep everyone happy. So just keep most people happy and you'll be successful.
So you also do cartoons on YouTube.
Yep.
Now, how long have you been doing that for?
I've been doing YouTube since December 2009. And in December 2012, I started making good videos, which were cartoons. And then, so since then, December 2012.
And you have a good amount of views. How many views do you have on your cartoons?
So close to 3 million now.
Close to 3 million.
But they're also, on YouTube alone, I have 2.5 million, but then they're also posted on other websites. So I think it's probably over 3 million at this point.
Nice. And as that, you do cartoons that are, you know, just whatever you want. Whatever you want to talk about, you create a cartoon. And now you also do cartoons for other, you get hired now by doing that. You started to get hired by other people to create cartoons for them as well, right?
Yep.
So how much of your time is split between performing and then, you know, doing these other things like, you know, YouTube channels and stuff?
Okay. So if I'm not traveling to do a show, I'm at my computer making a cartoon. I don't really try and book anything anymore because I was always kind of like, I want to work really hard on performing until I'm like 30 to a point where it can kind of take care of itself and then focus my energy on. At the time I was thinking Hollywood, but now this YouTube thing is kind of happening. So my performing, the agents and between agents and word of mouth and street performing, it kind of takes care of itself. So I would say 100% of my time that I'm not on the road, I'm at my computer working on a video.
Are you working on new material? Are you kind of locked in with what your show is?
I'm doing stand-up a lot. That's the other thing I do is since I don't have a partner anymore, I have all this free time. So I've been doing open mics and working on stand-up pretty heavily too. So I'm really trying to transition the show. Well, right now I'm trying to transition it to having everything fit in one small suitcase. And then after that, I'm going to slowly transition, I think, to mostly stand-up.
And what's the reason for that?
I hate carrying shit. I hate it. I don't want to carry it. I'm talented enough to not have to carry shit is basically what it is.
That's funny. That's I think a lot of people who are juggler type or a variety acts kind of feel that.
Yeah.
But it's hard to give up. You know, it's like I'm used to having all these things to, you know, not hide behind, but like I don't need to tell jokes because I can get up there and kill, you know, 5 minutes juggling and then five minutes on a unicycle and then 5 minutes on this. So that's pretty crazy to want to switch completely out of it. I think a lot of us probably want to wish that we could do it. And I don't think I could be just a stand up and get up there without, you know, my security of all these props and stuff.
Have you done open mics?
No, I've never done I've never performed without props.
Dude.
I'm scared.
As soon as we hang this up, you get on the internet, find an open mic tonight, and you go. And it's going to be awful. It's going to be so bad. Like, I'm at a point now where I can say, like, yeah, I'm great on stage doing my show. Like, I'm as good as I'm ever going to get at that. But when I went to the open mics for, like, the first month, it was like, hey, guys, so I'm going to tell some jokes and I hope you like them. I was petrified. I don't know what came over me, but it was just like the loss of props, I guess, scared the shit out of me. and put it in my mouth. But it just makes you so much better with your props. It really does. Right. And you don't have to do it. I used to hate open mics and hate doing them, but now that I've done it for like 3 or 4 months, even if you don't want to be a comedian, I think it just makes you better.
Yeah, that it kind of like what we were talking about earlier, where what's the worst that could happen? Yeah. You get up there and you bomb, and it's you know, probably the most painful thing ever, but you know, the next guy gets up there and now you're done and everyone just forgot about you.
Speaking of that, the one thing that eventually made me feel better was like, oh, I keep bombing, but I kept going, and I'm like, all these people are shitty, so I'm not actually shitty. I'm as good as everyone else.
yeah. The bar is just at a different spot than you're used to it being.
Yeah, I'm not doing a bad job. I'm doing the same job that every single other person in this room is doing.
Yeah, I would love to get out and do it. But yeah, it's terrifying. I've never performed without props, and
it is so terrifying. It is so absolutely petrifying. But you got to do it. Guaranteed, you will. If you start doing that, you'll start coming up with all these great routines with your props that you never would have thought of.
I have to get out there and do it.
Just do it tonight.
Just do it. I can't tonight. maybe later.
Okay.
Keep telling myself that. You have to hold me responsible, though. You'll be my inspiration.
It's okay, man. I've been saying I would do it another night since I was 18, so you'll get there.
So what was that point where it put you over the edge, where you know you always wanted to do it? And, you know, because that's a hard thing to do for everyone, entertainers or non-entertainers, to like. You know, I think all of us have something, oh, I wish I could do this or I want to be doing this, but it never happens.
Yeah.
And then if it does happen, there's like something that pushes you over the edge to make it happen. What was that for you for doing the open mics?
Working by myself, from going from the partner to by myself, I was like, well, if I don't do this, like, what's the next thing? Like, there's nothing. I have to at least try. So there was that half of it. And the other half was pretty much exactly what you said. We were like, I think about this every day. I just got to go and do it. I have to go do it, and then I won't think about it every day. Like, it's that simple. Whatever that thing is, that you're like, oh, I should just do this, and then, you know, life will be better. If you just do it, then you find out if life is better or shittier or more likely probably exactly the same.
Right. There's so much value in that just do it. Like you said, just do it. And stop thinking about it and do whatever the step is that you have to do, because it's, you know, not going to be as big of a deal as you're making it out to be.
And it's so hard, though. Like, that took me... I'd done a couple open mics here and there over the years, but that took me probably, like, five, six years to just do it.
When you're on stage, do you have any go-to... Like, not necessarily, like, go-to tricks or jokes or anything. Do you have any, like, go-to...
Without a doubt, it's confidence, 100%. Just go out there and know exactly what the show is going to be and what you're going to do. And if you do that, I'm there with you. And I think the best example of this that I've seen is definitely the start of Daniel Martin's show. Have you seen his show?
I haven't seen his show, no.
So he comes out. He's basically like, hey, guys. This is pretty much exactly what he comes out on stage and does. Hey, guys, my name's Dan Martin. I got one goal tonight, and that is to be the best magic show you've ever seen. You want to see that show? And they're like, yeah. And he's like, all right, let's do it. Music starts. He walks backstage, grabs some props, comes back on. It's like a one-minute thing, maybe 2 minutes. But just the fact that's like, this is what I want to do. You got to be with me. Do you want to do it? And it's amazing how powerful that is.
Yeah, that's cool. Do you get nervous before you go out and perform?
No.
And what goes through your head as you walk out there? Besides that, you know, owning the stage and having confidence, do you think about the crowd as like what you're delivering to them? So then the other side of that is, how do you want the crowd to, or people to remember your show when they talk about it, you know, a week later? What's the sentence that you want them to say or think in their mind?
That guy was funny.
Yeah, just straight up funny.
That's it.
That's enough.
I think that most people, when they meet you, they can only remember one thing about you.
Yeah.
If they really like you, maybe two or maybe three if they're your lover. They really can only remember one thing. So for me, or, you know, two. So for me, the first thing I want the crowd to remember is that I was funny. The second thing I want them to remember is that I was nice. I guess if there was a third thing, And it's in that priority too, like funny, nice, and, you know, talented with tricks or whatever, I guess, would be the last one. What about you? What is what do you want people to remember about you?
So, yeah, I think that's a cool how you said that priority as well is, you know, the tricks are the last priority.
Yeah.
And if there is a third one, it's tricks. And I think that that completely goes away, or it should go away in people's minds that you know, my show is mostly tricks. I don't have, like, jokes. You know, it's funny. My show, people come out and say, oh, my show was funny, but I don't, like, write jokes. There's funny moments that happen through the, you know, routines that I do with juggling props.
Yeah.
But I don't especially want people to, I think most, well, there's certain jugglers who do, but, you know, most jugglers don't want to walk off the stage and people say, hey, you're a really good juggler. it's like an insult.
Yeah.
You know, well, there's certain performers who that's what they do. You know, it's just like technical juggling. You know, neither of us are, you know, going for that.
No.
Because I'm not, you know, the best juggler or anywhere near being anywhere near being the best juggler.
Yeah, that's the other thing that made me want to get rid of the props is I'm not a good juggler, and I don't want to practice at being a good juggler. Although I have nailed 5 clubs, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I just saw you posted a video of that, which is good. I can't do that.
Yeah, I started doing it in shows like maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, and so far I'm getting it like half the time, so I'm really pumped.
That's bold to be adding it into shows at only that rate.
No, it doesn't matter. The rest of the show is so good that it doesn't matter if that doesn't go well.
Yeah. Yeah, as I said, that seemed like being a mean thing to say, but I think that's interesting. I usually try to make sure, like, I might take a lot of risks in my show, but usually not risks that I'm at 50% at. I play it safer than that.
No, well, I tell them, I'm like, the only way I'm going to get better at this is if I do it in a show, so I'm probably not going to get it, but I want to show you guys.
Yeah, that's cool. It puts them on board with you, too, where they're, you know, you're a human, which is neat.
So, yeah. I really want to nail that trick because then more people will respect me. So.
Yeah, so you think. But like all this, once you do it, you realize that no one cares.
Well, I care. Like whenever there's this great act called the Circus Firemen, and they're insane at freestanding ladder, and like it's respectable. It's awesome. It's really cool.
What do you have to say to the kids and the people listening, moving on with their life, besides go do open mic night and don't worry too much about what people think? What is your advice to round this out for people as somebody who is, you know, pursuing?
Is this almost over?
Yeah, well, hey, you got more. If you got more to go, do it.
I could talk for hours, man. I don't want to draw any more cartoons. Advice. I just want to meet some young kids that want to do this, really.
Yeah.
Because I'm getting to that old age where I'm ready to go on, you know, and I want the underlings to come and, you know, show me what is the next thing. I haven't really seen, have you seen that in anyone?
Young people coming up?
Yeah.
No. It's weird.
Yeah.
I feel like there was like a few people, I'm talking mostly from like the college market.
Yeah.
I think there was like a few people that were like ahead of us, you know, one generation before us that are, you know, five to 10 years, maybe older and got into it before us. And it was like hot then.
Yeah.
And then it like hit, you know, I think you're about the same age as I am.
How old are you?
29.
Yeah, we're the same age.
Yeah. So then we came in and there's a lot of us, you know, it was like, you know, Chris Jones.
Yeah,
We were talking about him. He was on, you know, people listening to this know who he is, and like me and you, and there's a lot of that, like, you know, coming into NACA, whatever that was, you know, 4 years ago or something.
Yeah.
And it was like a big, you know, that's like the new school of people. And since then, I haven't really seen any people that are coming in really, you know, proving themselves and making much of a splash in that scene.
Yeah.
Nobody. So I guess it's about time. You know, it'll either happen or it won't happen. I don't know. It's interesting to think about that, though.
I mean, it's good for the people that do want to do it because there's less competition.
Yeah.
I guess I can think of two people. There's this street performer called Sam Malcolm that's maybe like 3 or 4 years younger than us, and he's really good, and it's been fun watching him get better and better. And there's this other kid in Omaha, Travis something, that's like, he's into it. I think he's going to go far just based off his motivation. I've never seen him perform, but he's addicted. He likes it.
Yeah.
So advice I would give is keep in mind that the only way you'll be successful is off repeat business, and do whatever you can to make every gig you do a repeat gig.
By being, like you said earlier, someone who... That doesn't mean you need the best show. I think that was a pretty important thing that you said earlier, where you don't need, it's not really about the show, it's about the experience of you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Show can't be shitty though.
Right. Being people on stage and performing, we have this like stage personality.
Uh-huh.
That's, you know, usually one step, you know, higher than, you know, real life. And then there's real life, which is, you know, what we just live, and it's sometimes like a weird balance between those two lines. I think it's easy for me to get up on stage and be an entertainer,
mm-hmm.
and be like, you know, like have that confidence, and I walk out on stage, I'm like, oh, that person is crazy, you know,
yeah.
Where'd that come from? I'll say stuff, and I'll like think back, and like, you know, like that was awesome.
Yeah.
And then in real life, you know, I'm like a little bit more like reserved, like I hold back, like obviously more shy and like not over the top. You can't be living like that all the time. You'd be the most annoying person ever to be with.
Yeah, you'd be Robin Williams.
There's, you know,
I did knock Robin Williams, but he was like my idol growing up. So I just want to make that clear.
There's like this weird thing when you go do like a teaser or something on campus where you're a real person,
mm-hmm.
but they're expecting you to be like an entertainer.
I hate doing teasers. And I've only done like one college this year, so this might not be a good question for me to answer. But when I would do teasers, I feel like a lot of the other acts like do like mini performances or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm not into that at all. So I just walk up to tables and I'm like, hey guys, and I have some flyer or something. I'm like, here's the show. You got to go. It's going to be great. You're going to love it. And then I walk on to the next table. I'm very, very middle groundish, and I don't try and perform. I hate bringing props with me to do a teaser because they're going to judge you. They only remember one thing about you, and they're going to be like, oh, that guy is juggling clubs. That's all I need to know. I don't bring props. I basically do the job that the student activities board should have been doing all week long.
Right.
It's so hard to find the right people to do that, because even if they do send kids out to the cafeteria and stuff, they don't care enough. They're just like, hey, here's a piece of paper.
Yeah.
I've seen it happen a million times doing teasers, and like I'll be at tables like introducing myself and explaining it to them, and other people will be like, oh, I did the whole rest of the cafeteria. They all have flyers.
Right.
You know what the show is? No. Like, do you want people to come to the show or not?
My issue is always when I go do a teaser, I usually open up with, hey, you know, I'll have like a poster or whatever and walk up to a table and, hey guys, are you coming to the show tonight?
Mm-hmm.
Or have you heard about the show tonight?
Yeah.
And it's funny. It's like a bad opener. I know I'm like need to figure it out because they're always say no.
Yeah.
No matter what, because they either haven't heard of it, or they're just not going, or you know, somewhere between those two. And you know, you'll go to these colleges and people will say, oh yeah, we've booked, we put it out on our Twitter, it's been on our Facebook page, it's been all over. Then you like, you know, you look at their Twitter page and they have 95 followers.
Yeah.
On a college that has 10,000 or 20,000 kids, and they're like, yeah, we've been pumping it on our Twitter all week. I'm like, that it got to nobody though.
Yeah, and what makes me most upset about that is when I was in college, we did this TV show on the college TV station. And so we started putting ads in the dining hall. We made little ads and like little pop-up things and put them on the tables in the dining hall. And it was not any work at all. And we did it for maybe like 2 or 3 weeks. And at the end of those 2 or 3 weeks, everyone was watching the show and they all knew who we were. And it was like one of the easiest things we ever did. And I'm like, all you have to do is put ads in the dining hall on the tables. and get an article on the front page of the paper. Like, that is not hard to do. It's not. It's not hard.
Right, and then never gets done, and then we have to deal with it when we get there.
But I've also, like, I even just did a college, I did a show in a cafeteria to college like 3 weeks ago. There's only like 20 kids there, but it was a great show. It was an awesome show. So, like, the number of people that come isn't always important for me anyways. It would be nice. I know the shows. You grow up thinking, like, oh, I want to do all these great shows, and whenever you think of doing a great show, you, like, picture this pristine theater with everyone dressed nice, coming from a nice dinner, and, like, you know, velvet curtains and plush seats that just got installed 2 weeks ago. And that happens, like, once every 3 years. The rest of the time, you're, like, doing a show for the Boy Scouts behind Bank of America for, like, the chili cook-off for Du Bois Community Days.
Do you think sometimes those smaller shows you can actually, so, you know, whatever we got, you know, each person has a reason why they got into performing. Most people want to either, you know, make people smile or inspire people or something. And we think that that happens in like an arena full of 4,000 people screaming fans. But I've obviously been at that same spot where I'm doing shows for 20 kids at a college or something. And during the show, sometimes I'll be like, this sucks. But then I'll find out that it was awesome. I think sometimes that we can kind of forget about that some of these smaller shows actually are more impact on the people watching.
Before the show, sometimes I'll feel that way. I'll be like, this is so stupid. Why am I here? Like, there's no reason for me to be in this barn in negative 40 degree weather in North Dakota for 15 people. But as soon as the show starts, like, I leave all of that behind and I forget about it, and then it's a good show. But sometimes you're like, oh, I flew 8 hours, then I drove 3 hours for this? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And you're just kind of upset about it. But then as soon as, yeah, well, I already said it. Once the show starts, like, I want to give the people that are there my best show, because they shouldn't be punished for other people that didn't show up.
Yeah, that's a good thing going into it. Be in that moment, and, you know, those people are there.
Yeah.
So they deserve the best that you can give them.
Oh, I love doing shows. Love it. I think the best compliment I ever got, and this, I hope this comes across because it might sound weird, is I did a show at Omaha, Nebraska this past weekend. And I was up on my freestanding ladder, and sometimes I have like a 30% chance when I'm climbing down, I'll fall off. And I don't like falling off because I have problems with my knees. So I have people come up and grab the ladder and help me down. So I did this monster show. I just finished juggling, and this woman comes up, a vendor, yelling and screaming, "It's not safe. Clear the streets. Get lost. Everyone leave." And I'm like, no, I need your help to get down. And, like, if people start walking away, like, I'm up on this ladder. Like, that is not safe. It's not safe at all. Everyone stay. And she's freaking out and screaming. Turns out, I didn't know this, but someone had a seizure, like, behind the show behind me. And, like, the ambulance was coming. But, you know, they weren't going to be there for, like, another 5 or 10 minutes. So I find out what's going on. I'm like, everyone stay calm. It's totally safe. The ambulance is coming. You got nothing to worry about. But I do need help to get down. So they help me down and stuff. And the woman is still freaking out and yelling. And it's like, you're not helping the situation, ma'am. Like, you're freaking everyone out. Like,
yeah,
everyone is safe. The ambulance is going to come and save things. So that was one thing. And then I was trying not to be upset because I just done this monster show and now I wasn't going to get any money from it because, you know, it was a tip collecting thing. And she came, like, so I didn't get upset. And I actually ended up making more money in that show than some of the other ones, which is crazy. But the compliment was that the ambulance came and then they left. And then, like, 2 days later, I get a Twitter message that says, "Hey, my brother's the one that had the seizure at your show. I'm so sorry that we cut it short, but we wanted you to know that we both absolutely loved it."
Huh.
And I was like, are you kidding me? It's like, your brother had a seizure and you, like, even remembered my Twitter handle?
Right.
I was like, oh my God, that is so cool. And I wrote her back and I was like, you know, you have nothing to worry about. I just want to make sure that he's safe and stuff. But such a weird thing to be a compliment, but it totally was. Totally.
Yeah, right. No, that's crazy. Like you said, that you were even a thought in that day. Like there were more important things that day than your show.
Yeah.
But on the other side of that, you know, we forget that sometimes. Sometimes we think we're, you know, I feel like that somehow. Oh, I'm going to go up there and do like silly tricks and, you know, make people laugh. And that is the most important part of a lot of people's day because they haven't gotten that in, you know, weeks or months or ever in their life. You know, they've never seen this, like something like that happen.
Yeah, exactly. We take it for granted, I guess, that we see it all the time.
And I get that all the time when I do something. I'll come up, that sucked.
Yeah.
And people are like, well, I've never seen anything like that. And it's like something, I'll be like riding a unicycle and juggling, you know, which is like, to us is like, you know, the stupidest, you know, we're like, well, anyone can do that.
Yeah.
And, but people are like, well, I've never seen anyone do that. Like in person, I've never seen that happen right in front of me. So,
which is so crazy to us. We're like, what do you mean you never seen that happen? What are you talking
like,
about?
All my friends can do this better than I can.
You live under a rock? That is, it's incredible. Just stay happy, I guess, and do a good job. That's all you got to do, guys. You just have to do a good job.
I think that's a good ending point right there.
Yeah.
Just do a good job.
Yep. Every time I come off stage, I'm always like, same like you said, oh, that show is terrible. But on the stage, you're like, oh, that was great. But I think it's because, oh, let's end it on this.
All right, we'll cut that part out where I said we'll end it.
No. We'll do this. No, wait. I got a better ending.
Oh, okay, go.
I heard this quote once that was something like, the reason we become artists or entertainers or performers is because we saw someone do it and, you know, we loved it. And we loved it so much that we wanted to do it better than them. And when you're starting out, you're really bad. And it takes you a long time to get as good as what first inspired you to do it. And then when you are that good, your tastes have improved and you've gotten, you know, more refined tastes. So you still think you're bad and you're always wanting to improve. And just to keep that in mind that you're your own worst... No, end it the other way.
No, Alex, we're going to end it that way. Some good stuff there with Alex. If you're thinking about doing something, you got to just go do it. That keeps coming up with pretty much everyone that I've been talking to. We think about things that we want to do, and we come up with all different types of excuses of why we don't want to do them or why we can't do them. When it comes down to it, those are really just excuses, and you just got to go do it. Just go do it. You'll realize that, you know, the world's not going to end if you mess up or if you make a mistake, and you will feel better about actually getting out and doing something. Alex said his number one go-to thing, you know, when he goes out on stage is having confidence. That's a great mindset to have in every circumstance of your life, whether you're going onto stage or in your everyday life. Having confidence alone will open up doors that you never knew would even be possible. Go do something. What are you going to do this week that you have never done before that you've been thinking about doing? Whatever it is, just do it. Sorry, Nike.
Thank you for listening to the Chris Ruggiero Podcast.